Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV. It is the final Weird Show. I am your host, Paul Machen. I'm joined by Chris Pajak, by Ben Kelly, and by Ross Chanley. We're going to talk about Liverpool's 1-1 draw at Old Trafford yesterday. But first, just want to tell you, this podcast and video is in association with The Athletic. They've got a fantastic offer. Chris Pajak, what is that offer?
60% off your yearly subscription, Amazing. Paul. It's a flash sale. It's only available this week. You can either click the link in the description, or you can go to theathletic.co.uk/RMTV60 to get your 60% off. Well worth it, if you ask me, mate.
Absolutely fantastic stuff. There's a quote. James Pearce has done something in the aftermath of the match on Sunday. A quote from which is, "Liverpool, top of the league, echoed around Old Trafford shortly after the final whistle. However, this was a defiant rendition rather than the booming celebration that the 3,000 strong travelling cop had envisaged." That full article is there on the website. Please do go and read it, obviously, after you finish watching or listening to this show. It's an interesting point, Chris. I think that the pre-match anticipation was very, very high for this game. You know, all the talk around this one was, look, Man United are probably the worst Man United side that's been in the Premier League era. I don't think there's still any doubts over that. The best Liverpool side that's been in the Premier League era, I think there may be some room for debate, but for me, I think that's the case. And
surprised if anyone's debating that.
Yeah. We are on the internet. It didn't end up being the game I think we all wanted it to be, which goes without saying, we always want to beat Manchester United, but it did feel like this could have been some sort of, like, I don't know, like, crowning achievement somehow, finally a time to really show our strength, go to Old Trafford and really do a number on them, and it just never materialised.
No, it didn't, and I don't think Liverpool played particularly well, if I'm honest with you. I think we started quite poorly. I think Manchester United probably deserve a little bit of credit for how they set up. They'd obviously seen the games against Sheffield United and Salzburg and Sheffield United and identified
that... Probably watched the Sheffield United game twice.
That's
incredible preparation.
So I think, well, maybe they did. Maybe Sir Alex Ferguson watched it once and gave his feedback, and Ollie watched it another time and gave his, which was ignored completely. But look, Liverpool have struggled, I think, this season when a team has had two strikers up against us, and, you know, they've got in one-on-one situations with the centre-halves, and Manchester United engineered that situation a few times. I actually thought the analysis was really good on Match of the Day about that, from Murphy and Darren Fletcher. But Liverpool just didn't get into the game. Klopp made his tactical changes and stuff. And you're right, Liverpool probably should go there. And 9 times out of 10, we do beat this Manchester United side because we are a better side and a better run football club at the moment. And it's disappointing, ultimately, that we didn't get 3 points.
Yeah, it was... We were just terrible in the first half, Ben, genuinely. Like, you know, I think that me and Chris had talked about it on the Instant Match Reaction show about how... You know, the game plan is clearly maybe to try and silence the old Trafford crowd and what have you. And really, by a lack of invention on our part, I think we did the opposite. I think we involved them. And, you know, we're talking about a game where Man United had significantly less than 40% possession, and they still only had 2 shots on target in the whole game. So it's not like they put together a vintage Manchester United performance. But as a result, you wanted to see more from Liverpool in that first half, and we barring one or two little flashes, it wasn't there for
them. Yeah, I obviously going into the game, the news about Salah was obviously starting to rumour and all that he wasn't going to be in the squad, he wasn't going to be fit. And then when the team news was announced and Klopp was asked about it before the game, Jeff Shee sort of asked him, you know, how do you think that Liverpool, how do you set up differently when Salah is in the side? And Klopp said, kind of sticking with me now. He said Salah makes, you know, a lot of important runs behind that we're not perhaps going to have today, because obviously he started Mane on the right. And I think actually we did miss him, because what it meant was for me that Man United could commit their wing backs a little bit further forward and not have to worry about Salah perhaps, you know, making these inward runs or outward runs.
Salah's been doing this. He's been that out ball all season. Yeah. I think he's been playing a bit more as a traditional winger, hasn't he? You know, in that regard, Sheffield United is a great example of that. He plays very, very wide. So, you know, it could. It's not something I thought about during the game, but you definitely.
And then just as a result, I think I don't know if the midfield was a little bit stale. Obviously, Gini started the game quite well, but disappeared. I don't think Henderson played particularly well. Things seem to change when we freshen things up. But overall, it was just... While I went into the game expecting us to perhaps get all 3 points, I wasn't surprised by what I was seeing either. It feels like we watch this game every single year we go to Old Trafford. We seem to be playing a lot of long balls, which I distinctly remember we did in March as well when we went there and drew 0-0. I don't understand why every single season we go, it doesn't really matter how well we're playing or what run of wins we're on. We just never seem to show up there. And it's really frustrating, because this is the third season in a row now. The 17-18, we lost the game. Last season, we should have won because they had about five injured players in the first half an hour. And this season, we just never got going again. And I don't know what it is about that place or Man United or what. But it was really frustrating. It feels like I'm watching the same game every year.
Ross, I genuinely felt at times like, it's eased by the fact that we go and get a point from it, of course. But I just feel like we shit the bed at Old Trafford sometimes, you know, and I don't know whether that's like, and I reference it somewhere, it's a little bit like when Everton come to Anfield in that regard, like there's just something there that doesn't vibe with them, whether it's the crowd or whether it's the occasion or whatever, and we don't feel like, and some of this is of course in Manchester United's approach, which we'll talk about, but it didn't feel like we weren't our best selves. I don't think the players on that pitch performed. That Klopp used the word predictable in how we played.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. Probably the international break. I think we've got better at in recent times, but having that rhythm that we had of wins and people going away and then coming back and stuff doesn't help. United, I think Old Trafford, I think probably affect anyone. Their crowd were obviously up for that game and a bit different. But I think, like you tried to allude to, there was the way that they set up. Like, it's all well and good having Trent and Robbo as your outlets of attacking play. But, like, when they push up to wing-backs pretty high and take them out of the game, I think this is where I haven't recognised before, but the cry for a creative midfielder in certain types of games, I think it showed later on, which I know we'll come to. But once you take them two out, we don't have those people that can move forward. And like you said, Gini was probably the one for 20, 25 minutes that looked to do something, but we don't have that other person to go and take it on the front foot at the start of that game. So you don't need that industrious midfield. But I think it was a tactical change from United that we weren't expecting, plus Salah. Plus, I feel sorry for Robbo because he doesn't have the same rhythm and relationship with Origi and trust, probably, to get forward and make those runs in behind, because Origi's not Mane. And that's not a criticism of Origi. He's just not Mane. When you put Mane on the other side, I think it affects Robbo's game, and I think it kind of had a knock-on effect on everything.
And
mental block as well, probably.
Well, you're getting the ball to Mane. You trust Mane in possession. Mane will hold, you know, he's just better at football, isn't he, than Divock Origi?
I think if you look at their goal, Robbo does trust Mane. Does trust Origi, apologies. He plays the ball in, and he goes. And it's because Robbo goes and there's a foul on Origi that they get in behind. You know, so he does have that trust, but ultimately, you're exactly right. Mane probably controls that ball regardless. Falls on the ball or something like that, you know. Just that maybe a little bit
smarter. Not a lack of trust, but a lack of ability. He's just not Mane's level, is he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it wasn't sticking with him. And I've seen loads of people tell me that Origi had a really good game. And I disagree. I think he had a really good 2.5 minutes at the start that everybody remembers. And I think other than that, I don't think he really did very much at all. I think we struggled to get Mane in the game at all first half, but when he did and when he was in the game, he was the one that was looking dangerous. You know, he whips that ball in for Firmino. Firmino gets his shot off. He obviously gets the goal and it's shot off for handball. But when Origi's playing on that left-hand side, he's not Mane. And when Mane's on the right-hand side, he's not Salah and he's not Mane either, because he's playing in a completely different way. He's looking to get around the outside. He's not driving in and looking to get a shot off in the same way. So he's not even trying to be a Salah light. He's trying to be Mane right winger, and that's different again. So both sides were set up differently.
The issue is, I think we and Klopp, again, Klopp kind of references it. We come up against sides that look to defend for the lives, and you know, yes, there's times when they've, you know, you can normally say it's a three. 5-2 or whatever you want, but also that becomes very easily 5 at the back for Man United as well. We're going to come up against lesser teams who are going to defend for their lives, and we're going to beat them because we're much better than they are. But, you know, it's worth noting, they have got a good, there's a decent defence. They've got a very good goalkeeper. Harry Maguire is a good centre-half. Lindelof's fine. Wan-Bissaka is a good defender, you know, is a good fullback. And as much as kind of he gets pilloried, Young, I've never seen Young's never had a bad game against us at left back.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, so, you know, when you've got a team, and I think it's something Klopp talked about, he's saying, like, it's, and I think it's one of those. It's a bit of a sly dig because he's like, look, it's not, I'm not criticising Man United and saying this is how they play. It's not for me to be wound up by how Manchester United play, basically alluding to look, whether it's their owners or their fans or whatever, accepting yeah. that level of shite for the amount of money invested in it. But this is the thing, and this is what Mourinho's sides did. When teams of much better players play the brand of footy that, like, you know, lesser like to play, it's going to be harder to break down. And when you add into that, I called it bravery in post-match content, but Klopp called it predictability. There were no sparks in that team. You need moments of magic. You need people to really grab the game and really step it up. I thought Gini Wijnaldum tried to do that, Chris, but not enough of our players had that impetus. And that's, I think, what comes back to Ross's conversation point. We saw it, albeit when, you know, we're chasing the game right at the end. I think it's a different balance, maybe, if you start the game. But the introduction of the subs showed that when you bring players on who are more comfortable on the ball, who are more comfortable driving forward with the ball, that's how you cause problems against sides that are going to sit deep against you.
I think so, yeah. And I think, you know, Naby Keita, I believe, only came on in about the 83rd minute, didn't he? And we scored in like the 86th, was it? I mean, it felt like Naby did so much in 12 minutes. Or something
he
like that.
As many forward passes, pretty much, as Henderson and
he was brilliant, and I love the way that the big struggle I thought Liverpool had first half, and I'll come on to Naby off the back of it, is when we got the ball, Man United were tearing in at us, like really pressing fast, and I wondered whether when the substitutions were made, how long does it take to a sub to get into the rhythm of the game and the speed of the game, because it was very fast.
Yeah.
But Naby just come on, put his foot on the ball, a couple of little shoulder shakes, holds the man, gives himself a couple of seconds, and he was the first player to really do that
yeah.
since the first 20 minutes when Wijnaldum did it. And then he was able to just play those forward passes and trust. Firmino's touch got better as the game went on. I think that had a big deal to do with it as well. The introduction of Ox was good. And we just looked much calmer in possession, and because we were a little bit calmer mentally, we were able to start picking those forward passes out.
And some of this is obviously them just sitting in at this point. They're
getting, you know, tired as well.
And getting tired, and obviously looking to defend for their lives a little bit. So, but you know, we did that 20 yards further up the pitch because of the substitutions we've made. And as I say, I'm not saying that we would have been there if we'd started those tiers, because you can't be like that. Because I remember having Roy Hodgson in charge. And the last 10 minutes of every game, we'd just power men forward and go for it, and we'd all leave the game going, oh, if we just did that for the full game, we'd be onto something here. It's how the balance of football goes. But it's a shame, isn't it? Because I was talking in the office before, Ben, about how the really annoying thing about this whole thing is I ended up seeing Manchester United fans celebrate 3 times in the match in a 1-1 draw where they had 32% possession or whatever, because they celebrated their goal. They celebrated when VAR confirmed their goal, and then they celebrated when VAR disallowed our goal, and that's basically unbearable. Like, yeah. But you know, as much as I think they defended reasonably well and whatever, and they set up quite smartly to counteract us, it all falls down on us. I think, you know, I think that first half, the amount of times the ball went to the fullbacks, and we'd pump it into the channel to the feet of Origi, and periodically maybe Mane, and maybe it might go to Firmino, and a combination of poor control or just, you know, lacking that next, the bravery to play the next pass, we fell flat.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think we do have to give Man United a little bit of credit for that, because I think they may have seen the Sheffield United game where I thought again twice yeah yeah not once but twice yeah where they did manage to like sort of take the fullbacks out of the equation. And I actually think Ole, you know, we slag him off, but I think he got his tactics spot on yesterday. I think he actually probably won the tactical battle out of the, you know, across the game,
yeah.
Because we were Trent was crossing so many balls from just weird positions. Like, he'd be 30 yards away and far too narrow. And it's just, they've got two big centre-backs in there. Harry Maguire's massive. You know, we talked about, I think it was the other week when Wolves were forcing Man City to go wide, and they're going, "Oh, it's fine. Connor Cody's in there. They're just gonna head things away." And it was the same for us yesterday. If you play long straight balls, either the goalkeeper's gonna come out and claim it, or the centre back's gonna head it away. We don't have big target men in there that are gonna do anything. Chris mentioned it before about the
Robertson not being as fluid with Origi on the left. Similar with Trent with Manning on the right. You know, we've got ways of playing, and in the final third, that precision is an important thing. And Trent Alexander-Arnold is just doing his job in that. You know, if he's being teed up to a crossing position, he's going to take the cross on because he knows that he can deliver from those situations. But again, it comes back to become very garden variety in how we approached it, because it was just that was our plan. Work it up, get to that. I mean, Arsenal kind of did this to us as well. If you remember at Anfield, they went, "Go on, go get the ball, cross the ball in all day, and we'll eat these up." We'll not, because you're not gonna, Firmino's not gonna win straight aerial battles against centre halves. The ball has to be perfect, the timing has to be perfect, the run has to be perfect in order to do it.
But it didn't really feel like we got Firmino in the game at all. Like, you know, in the way that we've seen him get involved, it didn't feel as if he was dropping as deep. To be honest, I can't, other than the opportunity he had in the first half, I can't really remember a period where he got himself on the ball and did something creative. I don't know, I'm not watching it with the constant tactics head on that perhaps you might, Chris, or whatever, but like...
I was singing, lad.
No, true, but I don't know whether that's something that Man United did to nullify that or what, but for me, it feels like, and to be honest, it feels like it happens a lot in the big games. I don't want to criticise Firmino because I love him to bits, but it just feels like he struggles to make an influence on games like that more often than not.
You've just given credit to Solskjaer when in fact you should have given it to Sir Alex Ferguson. He gave the team
or feeling.
Oh yeah,
he was the only one on
I didn't give credit to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I gave credit to Man United. I didn't say anything. The collective.
Did literally say Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Did
fine. I? Dig up. Yeah. Dig up.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's fine. Right. Doesn't matter. No, but look. If we're going to give credit to Klopp for tactical things, you've got to give credit to him. Look, I think this is the thing. Again, it comes down to it. I find it hard to give credit to it because for me, that's not Manchester United. But it is. But that is the Manchester United that there. So he's entitled to set his team up any way he wants, and his mission there, Chris, ultimately. And look, we don't want to talk too much about Man United because it's, you know, we're Liverpool fans. But his mission there is not to get battered, and maybe look to do what they did. You know, they came very close to nicking a 1-0 win there. But it's interesting that I talked about this a few weeks ago, and someone said, like, how do you beat Liverpool? The way you beat Liverpool is either via a dodgy VAR decision, or you stick a thunderbolt out of nowhere in. And it was the former. I thought the standard of refereeing in that game was absolutely fucking abysmal. And it feels, I hate doing this, because we only ever do this when we drop points. We very rarely go back and discuss terrible officiating when you've won because you're too happy. But I thought Martin Atkinson had an absolute shocker. And we're back here once again where it's not VAR's fault. VAR is not at fault here. Once again, it's how it's being used is the problem.
Yeah, I think any time you're talking about a referee and one manager saying he's had a terrible game and one manager saying he's had a good game, you probably need to wonder what's happened to the referee. I think regardless, if there's a split opinion on it, then he's probably not reffed it very well.
Yeah.
I think if both managers go, yeah, ugh, it was a bit against us, then you know that it's probably about fair. But like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer literally gave him like fucking man of the match or something, you know what I mean? He went out of his way twice to talk about how good the referee was and how he deserved praising. I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous if you ask me. And, you know, I just felt like he refereed challenges differently for different sides. Yeah. And I think, you know, he let challenges go when it was Manchester United. And I'm all for letting challenges go. But I think you've got to let them go for both sides.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that. You know, every time we maybe had a slight niggle, it was pulled. When they did, it wasn't. And I'm not asked if the ref wants to let challenges go for both sides. I'm absolutely cool with that.
Yeah.
But don't do it differently for both sides, is what I'm saying.
What was it like? Because obviously you watched it on the telly compared to us watching it in the ground. It felt to me, I don't even know, did we get a free kick in the first half? Because it certainly didn't feel that way.
I don't think so. I think it was one in second half, and it was obviously a chorus of cheers after that. But I think you bang on, you see like little niggles and stuff go, you're going, that's not a free kick, but then you see like a tug on Mane or something like that, and he's been pushed off.
It felt like Mane and Origi got
Yeah, and they got no change out of that. I'm exactly the same as you. You know, let it go. But like, I know you come onto the goal for Manchester United in a minute. That foul on Origi that he didn't give. He gave four or five of them to Manchester United.
Ox had one in the second half. He gave
four or five of them to Manchester United for exactly the same thing. That didn't lead to a goal. I understand he left it to go to VAR and to see what happened, but he just felt everything was soft. And I know there's the narrative that, you know, he's from Manchester and, like, you know, it was never going to happen. But it's just, he got into your head at one point, and you're going, that's a foul, and he's going, what is going on?
Well, wasn't there a stat like something of the nine games that we've dropped points in the Premier League? Well, recently he's ref like four of them or something like that. You know what I mean? Which is a really high percentage for one referee. Yeah. The VAR stuff's crazy because I think, you know, I think Klopp summed it up really, really well. You're in a vicious circle at the moment. Where,
what's a vicious circle look like?
you know, the referee's letting it go because he knows he's got the fallback of VAR.
Yeah.
And VAR isn't wanting to overrule the referee. So, rawr, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue, actually. Yeah. Because it just means that the right decisions aren't getting made. And, you know, look, I'll be totally blunt and honest. If that was against me, if I was a Man United fan, I'd be like, that's fucking nothing. You know what I mean? But there clearly is a kick on him. The lad doesn't take the ball and Origi goes down. It's probably a soft foul, but a soft foul still includes the word foul.
Yeah. it was the fact that, like, yeah, it's just, there's nothing from Atkinson. He doesn't react to it in any way, shape or form. And if it's right, though, because Klopp, key to stress it in his post-match, which is what you're talking about, Chris, Klopp's interpretation of it, and I don't know whether he's just, that's him putting himself into it, or he knows this for the fact, is that Martin Atkinson has decided to let it run, knowing that he's got VAR to back him up, you know, and let the play run. But you're right, at the moment, it has to be, we're not seeing VAR overturn things. We're not seeing VAR overturning refereeing decisions.
Not on subjective decisions.
Exactly, but everything's a fucking subjective decision.
Handballs are.
With the exception of that.
But that's the point.
But that's the point, is that they've said that. If it's such a standard, it's, you know, they've got clarification on that. But in terms of what is a foul and what is not a foul, everything becomes subjective, so that, and we're not seeing any
of those being overturned. My issues with that is, if it is a subjective decision and VAR is saying it's a subjective decision, I think Atkinson should take another look at it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, because VAR has said there is something, but we don't want to overturn you, we want to make sure you get the right decision. And at that point, the referee can go over. And if he looks at it and goes, I'm letting them go this game, that's fine. I disagree with him. I think it's still a foul. I think it's a soft foul, as I've mentioned. But at least the referee's had another look. Yeah. He's not just decided, no, it's fine. Fuck it. Let's just carry on.
Yeah, I know. It just feels very, very strange, doesn't it? And it felt to me like it was going to be... Yeah, I was relatively confident that it was going to be pulled back, but...
So was Gary Neville, did you hear his commentary?
No.
He was like, that's getting pulled back, that's a foul on Origi. And when Gary Neville's saying that, you pretty much know it's a foul.
I think he said, reiterated it after the game as well. But like I said before, it comes back to consistency. Like you said, that's a foul, so with the four or five beforehand,
yeah,
which you let go. Like, make your mind up what is a foul and what's not a foul.
And that's the thing, and maybe that's why it's not been given, because of this whole clear and obvious error stuff, because I've had loads of people tell me, well, it's not a foul. And that is the thing. It's not cynical. It's not particularly aggressive tackle. It's not a booking. It's nothing like that. But you see 100 of those given across a Premier League weekend, and nobody bats an eyelid when they're given. So it's a foul, that's all it is.
Matip, Fabinho, and all that, I've then given against them all game, because that's kind of what happens in that situation. That's what's meant to happen. We don't agree, because you end up in a debate about, like, because the reason it becomes more subjective is you've got people with these, like, nostalgic view of what a tackle is. So if you ask those people, well, they're going to say, well, no. No, that's just good old fashioned footy. Well, it's made subjective by the fact that people have a different, you know, desire to see things.
The problem is with that view, a tackle is a man getting the ball. That's what it is. A tackle isn't a man kicking a calf.
Yeah,
you know, whether you think it hurts him, whether you don't, whatever. The lad didn't get the ball.
We talked
but he
about
did get the man.
We were talking about this on the drive up, and we did it on the radio as well, about like the way it's been used in the rugby. Things equally look more like a foul, but also less like a foul in slow motion. And what I mean by that is, you can see that there's contact, but the brutality or the physicality of it is taken away from it when you show it in slow motion. When you watch it, because when you watch that Origi, it looks soft. It looks very, very soft because you're watching it in slow. Oh, look, he's barely touched him as the 20, minus 20 speed slow motion replay shows you making contact with the calf. But he's blindsided. The guy comes up to him, kicks him in the calf. You see it at full speed. It looks far more of a foul because it is a foul.
That was the first thing. As soon at full speed, before obviously the goal was in, I can remember it so vividly. I went, "That's a foul," and then they go on and score. And I turned to my dad and went, "That'll be chalked off." That, yeah. And I was so confident because at full speed, it is just the type of foul that's given in the Premier League.
It's not
that's
our
all
job
it is.
To say whether the football's gone too soft. Yeah. Blah blah blah.
Blah,
blah.
It's not enough to send him over. That was a phrase I heard. It's not enough to send him over. Well. It's still a foul. He doesn't. Did you write your spot on? It's still a foul. He doesn't get the ball, and
he's not expecting.
And forwards go over.
Exactly.
And as I say, we've seen that all game long. Where just the defender from behind, you just go and you're putting pressure on the man. You're making sure he's got no time, and you get a bit clumsy. We're not. I'm no one sat here saying it's a deliberate foul or it's a, you know, there's anything.
Professional foul.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing like super cynical about it. That's just how you defend those situations. You get tight to them. You give them a bit of physical contact just to let them know you're there, try and put them off the touch or whatever, and you know, again, we saw it happen all the time, but it just didn't feel, and maybe this is just Liverpool bias, and it could well be, it didn't feel as though any of those decisions went our way in the first half, and they all seemed to go in Man United's favour. And then my worst fears were realised in that. Like, I've seen it happen, you know, when you celebrate a goal, Chris, and you go absolutely mad, and then you've got to live in the world where you've then got to stand in the stadium when that gets chalked off and watch them all give it beans back to you. I was throwing V's everywhere. trying to make eye contact with as many Man United fans as
I was just focused on one guy in a green coat. I did not look at him when it got chalked off.
It's horrible. It's genuinely, genuinely horrible. Because I say, effectively, they got to celebrate it. Got to celebrate a Liverpool goal, which is bizarre.
I had no clue what that was for. Ever again.
No, at the time. I mean, how could you possibly in the game, in the ground? There's no way you know that's what that's for. We were saying it might be for a foul, might be for Mane tugging him or whatever. But here's the point: if they're saying that a touch of a hand is they're counting that as handball, then I can kind of shrug that off.
Listen, by the letter of the law, it isn't a goal. But why, if it touches the defender's hand, is it not a penalty?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Why have they got two rules for what team you're playing on, the defence or the offensive side?
I think,
why is that?
I'm just telling you I think the reason is if it's led directly to a goal. So if it's a normal handball in the middle of the park, it's not necessarily, it's still a subjective decision. It's still not necessarily a foul. But because But that, I think the, by the letter of the law now, they're seeing it as, well, he's gained advantage, touchdown, and it's led directly to a goal, therefore.
Well, what about
not,
if a defender's hand?
Ben, you're not the official voice of this, so feel like God, Chris is about to slaughter you for this.
Right.
But you're just here. Yeah.
So
Chris.
The defender,
come on, Ben.
The defender accidentally touches it 30 passes later, Manchester United scored a goal.
Because it didn't lead directly to the goal.
But they got possession because he accidentally touched the ball.
Yeah,
with his hand.
If I mean, it accidentally,
it's fucking true.
But no,
it's
Chris is dead right.
You can give me smoky eyes all you want.
But it's not. But it's not.
It does directly lead to the goal.
But yeah. No, it doesn't in the same way. It's,
why?
It's, because there's several phases of play. And, you know, I'm not defending Man United.
I'm saying there's a handball in the box. Why is it if I'm playing in a Liverpool shirt, different rules to I'm playing in a Manchester United
the
shirt?
The point. I think the better way.
We're both playing football.
Yeah,
whether Chris, be allowed to touch
whether Chris
hands.
Gives a shit about phases of play or not is irrelevant. The point is that let's use an example of in that instance. Let's say who's the defender? Is it Lindelof the defender or is it Maguire? So let's say it makes the same contact with Lindelof and that just fraction of it just takes it away from Mane. You're dead right. That in that particular instance, that's one instance, that touch of the ball has a significant impact as whether it directly leads to a goal, because you can argue it's directly leading to not a goal, if that makes sense. You're dead right, that's if that's the case, then that is absolutely, that is stupid. But yeah, I honestly don't know. I think we're here having a fucking debate about fucking
if they
want to
say
shit debate about
accidental handball is handball, I'm fine with that. But why are they saying accidental handball only counts if you're attacking?
Yeah, no, it's mad. I didn't even realise that was it again.
I haven't seen the handball from Lindelof. I just saw.
There wasn't one, but he's saying it.
Oh, right, okay.
It's an equivalent.
Oh, I thought that's what you were saying. Right, okay, right. Well, I don't know them.
They've just decided there's two different rules around handball depending on what side you're on.
Stop looking at Ben when you're saying it. It's not Ben who's doing it.
Why have they done this?
There you go.
It's mad.
Blame the audience.
It's not
instead.
Even like the Premier League.
It's as
like
much
FIFA.
Everyone at home's fault as it is Ben's
fault.
It's FIFA. Fault.
It's like, why have you done this?
It's bollocks, mate.
Tweet Pogma later, mate.
Yeah. Bobby's chance. Ross is the best chance of the first half. I thought Bobby Firmino was shit. Particularly in the first half, he typified everything that was kind of... Everything wrong with, well, not everything that was wrong with us, because I don't think he lacks bravery, because probably Firmino always tries stuff. But the other side of things is that the sloppiness, just not, your touch needs to be tight. Everything needs to go your way. But when you're already talking about, you've got Origi playing on the left, you've got Mane playing, or not out of position, but not in the position he plays the most footy for, as in the guy who's in his position needs to be the one who is 100% on it, and he absolutely wasn't in that half.
Yeah, it shows well, because when he's on form, he makes everyone else tick as well, doesn't he? I thought he was sloppy in possession, as with everyone else. His first chance that he had, where he absolutely just twatted it, and like he could have had taken more touches or, you know, let other people come into play. Just typified it, really. And I think it was also difficult for him with the fact that, you know, you said five at the back for United before, it was seven at times.
Yeah.
And he's like basically, you know, on his own with two people, there wasn't much support for him. So, you know, until he dropped deep in the second half and we brought those other people on, I think he got involved in the game. He had some people to kind of play off. That's his game, isn't it? But I think he missed Salah. And I think, you know, the way United set up, credit to them.
Yeah, it's a shame, because the problem is in those kind of games, I think if we come up against like a really good opponent in that, you can do a tactical job, can't you? Because you can go, right, we're missing Salah, so we're gonna find a way to engineer a game. But in those games, the onus is on us to go and win, and those fine margins become a problem for us. But second half, we switched things around a little bit, didn't we, Chris? And you know, Henderson kind of went more right mid-ish. We basically just pushed him up and go and get involved, because I think in first half he wasn't doing what we've come to expect from Henderson in the more advanced midfield role. I don't think he was particularly, brilliant in when he was pushed there, but he certainly was more involved in things.
Yeah, I think his positioning, you know, was just much better, and it helped the team. I think ultimately, you know, for me, he probably pushed Ashley Young back a little bit further, which probably created a little bit more space.
We started getting crosses deeper, don't we?
Yeah, and you can understand why. And you know, it was very clever actually by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to play that three at the back with the wing backs, because it meant that they could get out to the crosser much quicker. You know, they don't have as much ground to cover, but certainly second half we did pin them back more. And you know, ultimately, it's that change of formation that means Lallana's in a really good area for his goal. Yeah. You know, he takes up Henderson's position when he comes on in the field, yeah. and he thinks about it slightly differently, and he's making a run back stick, doesn't he? But yeah, I didn't think Henderson had a very good game. I expect a little bit more out of the captain at Manchester United away, if I'm honest.
I think, no doubt. I mean, again, you can't help but be influenced by the shouting. People are calling people shithouses around you. If it permeates you thinking, but I don't disagree in those things. I think you needed, Klopp talked, Ben, about these games where you need to match the intensity and then show your football on top. And actually, I don't think we really did either of those things. I think there's a couple of times when it's not going to hurt to just put, I don't want to go like, put a reducer in or whatever, but you know, you just want to see, you want to see a little bit more, and a combination of not quite being physical enough and then not being right technically, it leaves you with nothing. That's how you end up with the crowd on top of you.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I expected us to take the game to them more than we did from the off, really. I mean, you know, I don't know whether he was looking to keep it tight for the first half, maybe to 70 minutes, and then do what we did anyway and try and nick a 1-0 that way. I don't know whether that was the overall game plan. But for me, particularly when I saw the teams come out, and it was kind of like, you know, when you see the team side by side and you see the names and you go, we just should be beating them. And yeah. that was the thing. But we didn't do enough for me then to go, it should have been our place, top of the league, 17 wins in a row, to go, well, we should just win this. We should just go out and do the job and showcase that we're the better side. And we never really seem to get going. And that maybe links back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show with the mental block at Old Trafford or whatever. But for me, you know, when you look, weighing it up pound for pound, Liverpool should have had a lot more intensity, particularly from the midfield. I think that was possibly the most disappointing aspect about yesterday. Not winning the midfield battle. Yeah. You know, if you're talking about Scott McTominay, you know, he's nothing, you know, and you've got the likes of Fabinho in there, who's a 6'5", 6" beast, who should be dominating that midfield. I didn't think he had a particularly good game, but the drive from Henderson and Wijnaldum wasn't there for me, and I think that was one of those disappointing things.
You need players to show something in that situation, and that's why Salah's great, because you need moments of excitement. You need players who go, here's how you lead the way. And it's funny because we keep referencing James Milner in the MK Dons game, but like, it was because it was so stark, because here's the senior lad and he's showing the kids, and then the kids start doing it off the back. But you just need one lad just to break with the rhythm of the game and show to lead the way. And that was the issue, and that's going to be the issue, Ross, I think, in these games at times. And that's why this Jeffers United game, it matches up for me so very well. Fabinho, Henderson, Wijnaldum was better, but again, I think he faded as the game went on. We talk about grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck. In that instance, it's just saying, I'm not going to play the simple ball. I'm not going to go back to the keeper. I'm going to fizz it into feet, someone's feet, or I'm just going to stride forward. I'm going to try and roll the man, and I'm going to take it forward. And the times we looked most exciting in that game, Mane did it a couple of times first half, and then obviously when we got the more attacking players on in the second half, that helped with that. When the game gets bogged down, I think the midfield feel like they're doing a good job. They're winning the midfield battle. They're doing their job. They're recycling possession. They're not losing it. Everything's kind of fine. But it needs that, going back to what you're saying, you need that spark. Maybe you need it. We don't necessarily need a creative, you know, like a number 10, you know what I mean? Like a Christian Eriksen or an Ozil or whatever. But you do need someone.
You could use the words you used before. I mean, you know, you said brave.
Yeah.
And Klopp says predictable. Well, you need an unpredictable or a brave player in those situations, probably, don't you?
Yeah. The one for me is the one that you just mentioned there. It was a surprise. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, that James Milner didn't start that game. Mm-hmm. You're talking about putting a reducer in. James Milner's capable of doing that. Yeah. Technical ability, James Milner's capable of doing that. The composure, James Milner, particularly in the first half, everyone was stopping in possession. Yeah. But I think James Milner brings that composure and experience into games like that. And the fact that I think Henderson played most of England's game on Monday, whereas James Milner's had a 2-week break. And I'm thinking I was surprised that he didn't start that game. Obviously, he must be nailed on for Wednesday, or there's something up with him. Exactly. But I think going into experience, into a high-pressure game, we knew Old Trafford were going to be up for it, United were going to be up for it. I think he brings something else in that sense. I get he's not as creative as the ones that you just said you need, but you don't necessarily need that in those games. I think he's got the experience to lead people and everyone else to calm down as well.
Yeah,
I've got no problem with him playing that midfield three from the start of the game. I think my big thing was I was surprised at how Manchester United set up, and I think they were probably surprised with how Manchester United set up. We were doing Five Live, and you know, we were talking to Flex from the United stand, weren't we? And I think I said to him, I think it'd be crazy for Ollie to change it up massively in this game, because if you change it up massively, Liverpool are playing the same way they've played for 2 years, pretty much. Manchester United going it with a couple of days training. Well, fuck me, they did it really well. Yeah. They looked like a well-oiled machine in the formation they were playing, and I think, you know,
they simplified the game, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
They actually changed it, but they changed it weirdly the other way. They gave themselves far more. They gave them an extra man in defence, but obviously you got the two of us, so they have a bit more of a counter-attacking outlet. So yeah, they made a big change without it being like, it's not like, I think your point was absolutely spot on. If they all of a sudden go to 4-3-3 and they're trying to go toe-to-toe with Liverpool, we'd have absolutely destroyed them there. So it goes back to it. I think they've handled it well. The one moment I want to talk about in the game, arguably Liverpool's best defender for the last 9 months. Very nearly had to pack his bags and find a free transfer off somewhere else. Joel Matip, if you're watching, Joel, which you're probably not, don't put the ball out of play, you dickhead. Don't care. I genuinely don't care. Is it James who's down? I don't give a fuck, mate. It's not on you to put the ball out of play. We don't put it out of play because we're dickheads now, and that's fine. I love that. The ball goes back to United, and they've got the chance to put it out, and they don't.
Twice.
Yeah. That's therefore, it couldn't be any less. The referee's not stopped the game, and United aren't putting the ball out of play. Don't you fucking dare put the ball out, you absolute idiot. I love Joel Matip. I think he was great, and I thought he had a decent game, all told. But that kind of moment, it was working in our favour. You know, we were riling them up. You know, it was getting our fans up and everything. And Joel Matip, Ross, completely and utterly just cut the legs off us by deciding to be a good man. Don't be a good man, be a great man.
To add to that as well, he'd already blown up 5 minutes earlier because James was winded. Mm. And that's the reason that he was down the first time, and we lost position for that as well. That's even more reason just to carry on and keep the ball. He's fine, unless it's a head injury. Carry on playing.
On the referee to stop.
It's on the referee, yeah, but before that, he thought it was a head injury, and he was winded, and we stopped the flow of our game when we were starting to get back into it.
Did he sit him on his knee?
Yeah. Nice. You know, I think Henson went mad at him, a field of players went mad at him as well, and rightly so. You don't do that, and it's something that we've got so much better at, like you said, of, you know, 2 years
it
ago.
It fed into my notion of shit in the bed. That's what it felt like. It felt like, what's the process there? Oh no, I'm sorry lads, I've got to kick it out. You don't have to kick it out. No other fucker's kicking it out. Don't be so fucking weak. Don't be so mentally weak that you feel that the pressure's on you to be the one to do it. And the problem is when you have those incidents in the game, you then start to tally up all the times where we've not been strong in the tackle and someone's not done this and not done that. And it feels like a cumulative thing of Liverpool we still need to be better at that stuff. We need to be better at being the bad guys.
I think it's something we've got loads better at, though, to be fair.
Oh, we have
it's
done.
Time wasting stuff. We're
entering into the fucking pit of fucking of the dark, soupy, primordial ooze of the dark arts. It's where it was fucking birthed from, is Old Trafford. You can't go into Old Trafford and not have that, because that's where we've fallen. I've watched much worse Liverpool teams fall foul of that. If we want to be truly elite, then you can't. That's where you test it. You don't cower in the face of being there. Like, you mean,
James was doing it himself anyway. And the first one in particular, I mean, obviously he's winded and the referee clearly thinks it's a head injury, so he stops the play. But he's fine, because when you see the replay, I don't know if you've seen the close-up of him, he goes down. The first one's from Virgil. And he looks and he watches what happens, and then he decides to stay down because we've got the ball, and he does it again for the second one as well. So he's fat. And I almost felt like saying, to be fair, he did get up with a nosebleed within the second one, so you know, there was something. But even so, Man United, they could have put the ball out to it, and that was the frustrating thing. If we get the ball and there's something clearly wrong with him and you put it out straight away, then almost fair enough.
But
the play goes on another couple of minutes. Man United have two opportunities to put it out.
We're chasing the game.
Yeah.
We're chasing the game, and I've got no problem, as much as I hate it, being on the receiving end of it. If it goes out for a goal kick and David De Gea wants to take every possible second to take that goal kick, fine, because we do that. You know, that's just one of those things that you can't have an impact over. But when you are taking, you are you're just taking time out of the game that you're chasing. It's stupid. It's fucking stupid. And it, like I say, I won't, and I've said my bit and I'm over it now, but it's one of those things that, like, I never want to see us do that again. I'm glad that we've become arseholes in some regards, because we've become so much better. This, I've seen us go away to Sellers Park and not kick the ball out, and you can just the foam at the mouth. Brilliant. That's what we should be doing. Man United made a success of themselves by being the bad guys. Everyone hates us anyway, so we might as well be arseholes. And again, oh, Man United fans are going to fall out with us. Great, great. I don't want to get a round of fucking half limp dick round of applause for being sportsmen, good sportsmen off Man United fans. Fuck that. I want three points.
I don't understand it, to be honest with you. And I'm glad that Hendo went over and screamed in his face, to be honest, because I think, 3,000 travelling fans were screaming at him as well for that one. Like, David De Gea has a chance to put it out. Ashley Young has a chance to put it out. Neither of them do. They know James is a diving little shit. And they're not putting it out, so why the fuck should we have to?
No, he wins by doing that. And he gets credit for he's using the dark art, he's playing the game, and we're allowing him to look better.
And by the time all that, sorry Ross, by the time all that's done, those two stoppages, we're at 65. Yeah. And it's like, because it was a couple of minutes for the first one, and by the time the play gets going again, you start sort of moving. And suddenly, I'm looking up the clock and going, where's that 20 minutes just gone? Oh, it's gone down, it's gone up Daniel James's arse because he decided to sit and...
Joel Matip's a lucky is a lucky lad that we've not lost.
I mean, the big talking point for me is in my first time at Old Trafford, the clock counts down,
I was thinking about this.
It was doing me nothing. I was like,
that's why you can't see the 5 minute stoppage time when they need a winner.
But you're like, it's like it starts at 45 and counts down, and you're like, and I didn't notice to begin with, and I was like, fucking hell, that 35's gone faster. I was like, is that clock counting down? And you're like, yeah. I'm like,
genuinely mentioned it like 3 hours during the game. So you're like, oh, Fad, you're shaking your head to yourself. Like, been to the game, looked up the clock. I wondered about that. I wondered whether this was part of that psychology of, like, you feel your time ebbing away, like, to try and get something against Manchester United. It's like having a countdown. It's a countdown timer, isn't it? You're watching the egg timing and the sand sink out, and
it was so confusing. Yeah.
Substitutes wise, Chris, I thought Oxlade-Chamberlain, best game in Liverpool shirt since his injury.
I think he did brilliantly when he came on. And again, it's all the things that he was kind of talking about before, about getting a midfielder on the ball whose first thought wasn't, let's play it to a fullback in space, on the halfway line. His first thought was, look up, where are the lads in front of me? How can I get the ball into their feet? Is it on? Yes, I'll play it. If it's not, then go to the default at the fullbacks and stuff. But, he just looked like he was ready for it. And, first time he has that shot with, I think it's with his right foot, something like that. Then he has a shot with his left foot, and he comes close on both occasions. And he really changed the game for me. And, he showed probably Naby when he came on how to get involved in the game quickly and stuff. And yeah, really, really good cameo from Oxen. I think he's pushing for a start now, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think all the subs, Ross, I mean, look, again, you handle social media. I've seen a couple of, like, tweets after the fact. Including one from our good mate Andy Grant.
He's fucking loads.
Yeah,
but not as good as Grant. No. Surely. I guarantee you, my leg's gonna grow back if Adam Lallana comes in and does something in this game. By next Friday as well. He timescaled it.
Yeah, I can only imagine Twitter was an absolute cesspit when Adam Lallana. And I turned to Chris and went, "Oh look, here comes Adam Lallana for all the heads to roll off on social media."
Yeah, funny enough, it happened last season as well. I think we were talking about it last week when we played Burnley. He started. Yeah. Everyone, heads fell off. He scored a goal, and then he didn't start the next game. And everyone moans. And it comes back to the thing of having a squad, and we only see things on face value. Yes, he's deteriorated. Yes, he's not the Adam Lallana of 3-4 seasons ago when he was leader of the press and probably one of the best players in Klopp's side because that's where the team was. He's not there now. He's there for coming on that. And I think probably the substitutions were good because I think coming back from injuries and stuff like that, the good impact subs. You could argue, I said before, you starting creating midfield, starting Chamberlain in hindsight might have been a good thing, but it might have been difficult because he's trying to start a game. Same with Divock Origi. I think, Origi's great, and they show glimpses, as you said, the first 5-10 minutes have been decent from the start. But for me, he's much better when everyone else is shattered. You know, maybe Chamberlain was good because everyone else was knackered and mentally and physically.
Yeah,
same with Naby Keita, come on, go make something happen. But I think that was really clever from Klopp, and you know, he sees Lallana training week in, week out. We don't, and again, you know, I know Twitter's not a barometer of things to judge things by, but everyone goes, oh, prick, you know, he's coming on, he scores, and everyone's bleating it.
We talk all the time, and the Lallana tear, you know, we say it with a bit of a smirk, you know, and a bit of an edge to it, I think at times, Rossi. But he turns forward, you know, he's constantly looking to be on the front foot. People think about him, I think, as being a bit, he's not fast, is he? And he's not going to do that turn, then he's not going to burst past the man and accelerate into space and cause all kinds of havoc. But in tight games like that, when there isn't space to run into anyway, it doesn't fucking matter. You just need a lad who's capable of, he makes his own space with his close control. And as I said, that positive attitude to go on the pitch and try and influence things. He doesn't score enough goals. He doesn't get enough assists. But, you know, to be fair, he gets the goal. You know what I mean? To all credit to him. But what he does, and again, all three substitutes typified this, they're all lads who just want to get the ball moving forward. They don't want to dawdle on it. They don't want to, you know, have five touches when one will do.
No, I think, you know, I take the piss out of his quick turns all the time, but it's some of the quick feet, as I said before, when a team's mentally and physically shattered, it's hard to monitor that and hard to, you know, keep hold of him. If he makes, you know, half a yard of space, which he's capable of doing by, you know, with quick feet and quick touches, you know, we can put it through to someone else likewise, but with Naby Keita, you know, for the goal, he goes to go and play it left and goes, no, I won't do it. Comes inside a little bit and then creates another 5-10 yards for Robertson on the left-hand side and then whips it in. But it's having that composure, that the fresh mind's coming in. You know, it's effective and as well as going forward. But I don't think you get that with a genial Hendo. But you need that at the beginning of the game.
These are the games where, aren't they, Ben, where, look, Man City fare really well in situations like this, because ultimately when you've got those extra, again, Klopp's win, unpredictable footballers, lads who invent things on the pitch, you're going to have a better chance of creating stuff in the final third when your backs are to the wall, their backs are to the wall. And again, it's a massive credit to Naby, to Ox and to Adam Lallana, because I referenced it, I think, in the IMR, but certainly in conversation with Krista, we kind of had this against Man City in the Charity Shield as well. We threw those lads onto the pitch and we just looked so much more dangerous for it. And I still believe, you know, there's going to be plenty of games where we play Wijnaldum, Henderson or Milner plus Fabinho, because I think the best Liverpool is still using the fullbacks to create things. They're still having the best front three, but there's a stronger and stronger case being made for these lads are going to be able to deliver in games where we do need to go up that extra gear.
Yeah, I think and the introduction of a Keita or a Chamberlain, and there's no guarantees, by the way, because recency bias is what it is, because you go, it's so easy now to go, well, if we just start Keita against Tottenham, then, you know, that'll be a completely different midfield. And maybe it is time for a bit of a fresh up in the midfield, but, you know, Henderson and Wijnaldum at the end of the day, for me, can be quite similar players. You know, both quite aggressive, both good on the ball with the passing. Maybe if we just add something different in there, you know, you add somebody like Oxlade-Chamberlain, who, again, as I said before, is just looking to take the game to the opposition a little bit more. Yeah. You we do miss them driving runs. You know, if you think about the Ox goal against Manchester City in the league that season, where, you know, he gets the ball and he bursts forward. The amount of times we saw Keita do it, particularly for RB Leipzig, and we saw flashes of it last season when he did get a run against. He was fantastic against Bayern Munich, where he was picking up the ball and he was just driving 10, 15 yards with it. And also his pass selection as well. You know, that ball for Robertson that he plays out that leads to the goal, he could play a few seconds sooner, but he holds on to it, you know, and it was a period of the game where we were trying to bide our time.
He was really composed. He was the one who took the most touches and actually stood on the ball a bit more of all of them. But at the same time, Chris, he also, it was weird, he just did it in a much more dynamic way than we probably had from the other lads leading to that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the word to use. I think he is a dynamic player and he's unpredictable and he does things just slightly differently and poses different questions of defenders. And I think both lads have mentioned it there. And, you know, that holding of the ball just to make sure that Wan-Bissaka comes back inside, makes the five or six or whatever it was at that point again, gives Robertson that space. And, you know, I think he's probably looking to play the ball into feet somebody. I think that's his first thought, and as I mentioned earlier, his second is, okay, well, I'll pass it out wide for you. But there are times when he starts slaloming on the ball and he dribbles unlike most players in the league, and I find that really interesting. I do think that's what takes us to the next level. I think what we've seen thus far this season is a Liverpool side who are playing exactly the same way as they played at the back end of last season. And I think when hopefully Naby is fit and firing and maybe Ox is back in this side, we will see a Liverpool side that play differently at the back end of this season to what we've seen at the start. Because it always happens. You always change, always morph. And a lot of times that is to do with the opposition. And right now it's looking like teams have found a way not to win against us, but to neuter and frustrate us at times. And Liverpool will need to find a way to counter that. And once we've found a way to counter that, maybe that opens up the fullbacks again in a few weeks' time. And it's a back and forth and cat and mouse, isn't it?
Create more, because look, they're set. If our thing is pass, cross, you can get set because you're not being pulled out of position. Now, obviously, players can pull out with bits of movement and what have you. But the second you take a man on, it just throws a cat amongst the pigeons. It makes you think so, because it opens up to a couple of things. It means that someone else has to engage. Because if you pass the man, it means the next person in line, they've got a choice. They've either got to stay where they are and stand the ground and either look to block something or whatever, or they've got to come and take on that, which then goes, well, hang on, who's then come for me? Which forces another defender to engage in that situation to cover for them. Or you maybe go past them. You increase the chance of being brought down. When we're just passing it sideways and moving it, you can't be fouled, because there's no situation in which you're able to be fouled. And we're opening up a possibility where you maybe win a free kick 20 yards from goal and Trent's got a shot at goal. Those kind of things. It just makes us more exciting, and hopefully we have a bit more of that.
The other thing we didn't do enough of, and maybe we haven't done enough of all season long, is get to the byline. I think that's what really stands us and City apart when I look at how the two teams attack. I think, you know, Trent's brilliant and Robert were absolutely superb, but when they're unable to get to the byline, we don't have wingers that do. You know, you very rarely see Salah get to the edge of the six-yard box at the byline and pull the ball back. It's what City scored the most tap-ins of any team, because they get to the byline so often and pull the ball back.
And they've been doing that for 10 years.
And they have. They're very, very good at it. And I just wonder whether, you know, Lallana and Keita and Ox, as great an introduction as they were, we still never had... I don't think we do have that one man who can just go and beat a man on the wing. And I really find that interesting, that maybe we don't...
I think why
we don't do it, or why we've not looked for a guy like that.
Yeah, I think the thing is, though, Trent, we engineer those situations well, and it's easy for us to engineer those situations when Salah just is there and he's tucked in a little bit more. So, because Trent does a lot, you know, I mean, they look great, the deep crosses, and he's so good at deep crosses. But we engineered quite a lot of those situations come the back end of that game, didn't we? Because we were in a stronger position to do it. But you're right, we need to be... In those cases, I think you need to be braver. You know, you've got to be careful and Klopp reference it, because ultimately all they've then got to do, because they've got so much pace up front, is just twatting into a corner, and they're gonna cause a few, you know, stressful moments or what have you. But you do have to just go. You've got to overload. Man City have got no fear of doing that. I think we just need to get a little bit, move out of our comfort zone, and I think this is probably the time of season where we're ready to take that evolution, because we've done a great job till now. I want to talk about it on the Genk build up more, of course, but just to pick up this chat. But this is probably that point of the season where we historically start to stutter a bit. So this might be a good chance to move on with it. Just briefly then, just around the other games happened at the weekend. Obviously, Spurs, the penalties, the VARs, these decisions. I mean, I guess you guys are going to pick up on this on the round the league.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's one of the two.
We haven't done VAR for a while, so let's just do that for this week.
And the FB West Ham 2-0 as well. I genuinely thought it was either going to be the end of Marco Silva, but then utterly collapsing to the slightly better West Ham side. But I was in Old Swan on Saturday afternoon, Chris, and they were all bouncing out the pubs, big smiles on the faces.
My brother come to ours, he looked like fucking Vince McMahon had walked through the fucking you fucking West Ham lads, you know what I mean? Fucking hell. And the worst thing is, they're 5 points off fourth. That's how bad this fucking league is. Or they were before we played anyway. Yeah, they will still be.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, a bit more of the weekend roundup will be happening on the Around the League show and podcast on the redmentv.com. So go over there, sign up for that one. Also, Genk is next for us. The build-up show will be coming. We've got a live show in Liverpool City Centre on the night. Come and join us. Tickets info will be on the Twitter account. We'll put it in the info underneath.
Have a good drink responsibly.
Yeah, we'll have a good responsible drink and party. Some live music. Watching the Mighty Red. Some live shows from us as well. It's going to be a boss laugh. The tickets are just £5. I say information below. And yeah, thank you very much to The Athletic for partnering with us on today's show. and podcast, theathletic.co.uk/RMTV60 to get that 60% discount in the flash sale and get some of the best writing in the world around Liverpool and sport in general right now. Thank you very much, gents. It's been as pleasurable as I think a 1-0, 1-0 draw with Man United could possibly be. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you all very soon. Ta-da.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.